Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Previously on Out Now with Aaron and Abe.
Aaron, I hear that you have a pretty cool story to tell me.
Well, it's a story, all right. I was going to see The Purge. I was leaving for a midnight show because I didn't go to my screening. I went to the internship screening instead of the Purge screening because I wanted to laugh instead of be like not terrified. Okay. But so I ended up going to the midnight screening with Scooter. And
sounds good.
Yeah. So it's like dark. It's like 11:30. Scooter comes to pick me up. I walk out my front door. The thing I see like in my neighborhood, there's like a street, and across the street there's like a cul-de-sac.
And okay.
So the first thing I see, there's like some random kid, like some child, like standing under like the one street light on the cul-de-sac across the way from me, like playing with a remote controlled car.
Is this real or not?
This is real. Yeah, like this happened.
Okay. it's midnight.
It's essentially midnight. Some kid's like standing on the other side of the street,
Is he wearing a gas man suit?
Honestly,
like
Michael
Myers.
I didn't try to stare at him too long because it just freaked me out to begin with. I'm like opening my door. This is the first thing I see. It's like some kid's like standing there. It was wild. I don't know what to think of that. It just freaked.
Aaron.
Yeah?
I was that child.
No! No! No!
Wait a minute! I forgot my introduction. Introduction.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Is everybody feeling all right? Is everybody feeling all right?
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here. Abe is not going to be joining us, but we have a special show planned. Out Now is regularly a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. However, every now and then we like to do special random bonus episodes such as this one. This week we're going to be doing kind of a special art house indie film showcase where we discuss a number of films that have entered into limited release into the more art house theaters, more artsy theaters, more independent releases, things like of that nature, because we just didn't feel like talking about The Purge or The Internship for a full episode. So, with all that said, I have with me to discuss a myriad of different films from awardscircuit.com, the man always considering the stories we tell, Mark Johnson.
Hey, everyone.
And from Things I Know About the Movies, the man who has ridden in from the east, Adam Gentry.
Hey, guys.
How are you doing?
Good.
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I thought this would be a fun kind of thing to do. Abe and I have been talking about it for quite some bit. Going over a lot of these other, you know, kind of smaller movies that have made their way into theaters that deserve more attention, I would say. And I figure we're just going to kind of go around in a circle and, you know, we'll mention a movie that we've seen and then just discuss it, whether or not we've seen it and looking forward to it, what we thought of it, what have you.
A virtual circle, you know, because, you know, we're obviously not in the same locations. This is going to kind of be kind of cool.
Yep. I love a good virtual circle.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'm always saying that. It's literally written somewhere.
It's like VR Troopers, just with, you know.
Just like VR Troopers. There you go.
Film nerds, man.
Gotta add that to the show notes now. VR
Trooper Transform.
VR Troopers. But how about, Adam, how about you start off? Bring up something.
Sure. Well, I guess the one that I think of that kind of maybe came out earliest in the cycle, so to speak, is Place Beyond the Pines, which is the follow-up to Blue Valentine from director Derek, and I'm not totally sure how to pronounce his last name. I know you probably do, Aaron.
Cyrin France, I believe.
Cyrin France. Which is pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting film. It's a look at kind of the idea that the sins of the fathers are revisited upon the children, sort of this ancient sort of archetype. And I'm sure, Aaron, you could probably do a better job of a plot summary than I can, so.
Okay, basically the story's told in three parts. The first part concerns Ryan Gosling's character, who's a motorcycle stunt driver. That's just, you know, obviously. He travels from town to town. He arrives in one town where he finds that a woman that he once had relations with, how old am I, relations with,
whoa, whoa, whoa.
played by Eva Mendes, has reared his child. Reared his child. How old am I, really? So now Ryan Gosling has, has a child, and he kind of takes a new kind of perspective on his life, and he decides to stay in town in order to take care of his child. This leads to him, for various reasons, robbing banks and to provide for said child. This story goes on for a bit, and eventually we kind of switch gears to follow another character played by Bradley Cooper, who is like a cop, and he's a good cop, and he gets involved into his own situation where he's forced to kind of go against other corrupt cops and handle that. And then the movie shifts a number of years, and we follow two young characters, and we basically watch how kind of how things that kind of happened in the past affect these characters and where it goes from there. That's a good way to surmise the plot, I'd say.
I like to say with Place Beyond the Pines that I sat through all three films in one sitting, and I'm proud of that. Because the one thing about the movie is it's very episodic, and I think that's actually kind of a problem with the movie, just because the first section with Ryan Gosling I think is really interesting, and I really appreciate his character and like the way that he reacts to things, and I it's really interesting. The second half is interesting, but not quite as interesting, and then the last third I just kind of lost interest, and it just seemed a little bit too written, if you will. It was pretty obvious that this was constructed, and you know, wasn't supposed to. It just didn't strike, you know, what's the phrase? It didn't ring true, as far as I was concerned. I mean, the performances overall are fine. Again, it's nice to see Bradley Cooper not doing something, you know, Hangover-like, to see him try to kind of sink his teeth into a dramatic role. It's beautifully photographed for the most part, which is something that the director is really becoming known for. But yeah, I liked the movie, but I really felt that it might have worked better as a novel than it did as a film.
Yeah, or maybe even as like a mini series on
sure.
You know, TV, you could kind of spread the generational gap.
I agree with that, actually. That'd be neat. I mean, I like the movie a lot. I think I like it more than Adam did, but yeah. I actually agree that a mini series would be a very interesting way to kind of watch this whole thing play out.
Yeah. And that being said, it might play better as a mini series. I'd still say The Placement in the Pines is my favorite film of the year so far. I liked the bold storytelling where they divided it into those generational gaps and whatnot. And I agree that the first part with Gosling is probably the best part. And when he's out of the story, you kind of miss him.
You want a house? I'll get you a house. You want to get the fuck out of here? We'll get out of here. I got that trailer. I'll get a truck. We'll hit the road. You pick a place you like, we'll stop. You don't want to be there. You were out of there.
What about my mom?
She can come.
What about Kofi?
He can stay. He can get his own girl and his own kid. That's every man's right.
Sounds like a nice dream.
But, you know, every performance in it from, you know, the two leads to the kids that play, that we see in the third act, we'll say, to even the side characters of, you know, played by Ray Liotta and
Eva Mendes,
Ben Mendelsohn. Yeah, I mean, if you want a sleazy bad guy, I'd recommend casting Ben Mendelsohn as a character.
Yeah, between that and killing him softly,
right? And Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom, yeah.
Right, he's great as that just sleazy kind of, you know. I don't want to say bad guy, maybe, but just a guy who ruins lives for others, it seems like. So, but I liked the theme, especially of the whole, like you mentioned, the legacy of what we leave behind for our children and how, you know, we hope that, you know, at least for me as a father, I hope my kids take the good side of me and leave behind maybe the rest, the same way that I, you know, growing up hoped to do, you know, for my own father. So I thought that was kind of neat how we see these characters who had, you know, issues with their own fathers, then as they become parents, watching their kids have issues with them, and I don't know. For me, it was a maybe more personal film, and I thought it was a thrilling, heartbreaking, great movie.
I really enjoyed Place Beyond the Pines too, and I would argue that it's at least in my top three films of the year right now. I think it's a really well accomplished picture that as Mark said, has to do with kind of how legacy plays out in the long run. Like, Adam, you're obviously like kind of like a sliding scale of how you appreciate each section of the film, where, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of the law of diminishing returns for me.
Mm-hmm. And okay. I would I guess agree to an extent in terms of, like, I think Gosling's part is probably the best part, because it's the most, it has the most, right. I guess, urgency to it in terms of what's, how that story is playing out and
yeah.
Where it has to go. But I really liked Hooper in this role, and, like, I mean, between this and Silver Linings Playbook, I think Hooper's doing a very good job of kind of dropping a known persona that he already has and going into much more interesting territory, and I'm looking forward to seeing where he...
I just want to know if his character, if Avery Cross, is actually related to Alex Cross at all.
Well, one cross can never cross Alex Cross, so that's too much crossing for one cross to handle this time around. But
if someone was going to cross Alex Cross, it'd be Avery Cross.
That's true. True enough.
But, I really liked the adopted. There's an adopted father to one of the characters, and I thought it was really well handled, because it's there's a lot of the two characters. They have different ethnic backgrounds, and they're just, you look at the two of them, and you wouldn't think, if you didn't know them, oh, it's just a father and a son. But I really liked the way that was handled, and even in some cases, the young man kind of gets along better with his adopted father and he has with his biological mother. And I thought that's kind of rare that you have adoption handled in some way that's very natural and isn't gimmicky.
I would agree. It plays out fairly well. You don't see a lot of it, but I mean, the movie's long as it is, so I don't necessarily think I needed to see more of how that relationship, you know, it worked, but I think I got a good impression of what handled. And like for that third part, as much as I think it's kind of the weakest section of the film, I do like how it turns it into this kind of almost like a Greek tragedy in terms of what you're seeing and how the past is reflecting on now. Like, it's a neat way to take the story. And like, I walked in not knowing what was, I knew that there were three parts to the story and I knew that they featured different characters prominently, but I wasn't sure like what the circumstances were to get us to these places. And right. So I really enjoyed that concept. That's the only thing that's kind of holding me back from liking it more, I think, is just what happens in the third act, even though I think the performances in it by two key characters, one of the kids and one of the adult actors, I think are very, very strong. I think the movie, it played out quite well to me, especially those first two acts, but I mean, it is very well shot. I really like the score of the film. The opening of this movie is fantastic. I love that. Just long tracking shot. Just
the opening's great.
On the back of Ryan Gosling as he's just walking. Mm-hmm. It's just which is like the epitome of like Ryan Gosling giving as little as possible to the screen. His back's facing the camera as he walks somewhere. Like that's, if anyone that like hates his kind of silent performances, then this isn't going to do much for them, I guess.
But it's really a testament to the director, just because he has this kind of bold, very almost independent kind of touch to what he does, and I admire that a lot. And I'm curious, did either of you have kind of a flashback to Miller's Crossing at any point during this film?
Particularly, actually, yes, I did, during a very particular scene, yeah.
Because I'm watching it, I'm going, like, wait a minute, this is Miller's Crossing.
It certainly has that kind of control in the way it's directed, too. It's just certainly the same way the Coen brothers are at once, too. Kind of fly at you with fast pacing all the time. Like it has a confidence in how it's being constructed, and making the film that they want to make, as opposed to making the film that should be easy.
It's certainly, the director certainly seems to have this as one of his motifs he likes to explore with this and Blue Valentine, and being these different portions of the narrative that are so divided by time, and sort of seeing how people are different from one time frame to another, and how their lives have changed and whatnot.
Speaking of Blue Valentine, I think Ryan Gosling's certainly grown as it. Like, Blue Valentine, as much as I like Ryan Gosling, I don't think Ryan Gosling's great in that movie. I think he's good, but I think Michelle Williams really runs away with it in that film.
No.
But I think Ryan Gosling's, in the older form, I think he's playing a character rather than really being that character, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
I don't think you get one without the other in that movie, personally.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're both pretty awesome in it. It would be hard to pick between the two, I would say. They're both.
I hated that she got an Oscar nomination and he didn't, personally. I thought that wasn't right.
I can see why.
That happens a lot, though. That happened, like, last year with Amour, with Riva getting the nomination and I can't remember. Yeah, Jorginho was left in the dust there, even though for the most part, he carries the film. So that happens.
So I think we've discussed The Place Beyond the Pines pretty significantly. I think we all certainly appreciate the movie. I think Mark and I like it a little bit more than Adam does, but I think we all would certainly recommend the film, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. I mean, if it's the kind of person that would appreciate something like that, I wouldn't just recommend it carte blanche.
It is a 2-hour and 20-minute film that's a drama that doesn't exactly get lighter at the end of the tunnel. But
it's a tunnel?
Yeah, it's a really long tunnel that just stays dark. That's all I had.
tunnels.
Mark, how about you bring up
another Okay. one? Well, along with The Place Beyond the Pines, the 1A and 1B, I guess, for my best of the year so far would be Jeff Nichols' film Mud, starring Matthew McConaughey, and The Tree of Life's Ty Sheridan. You want me to go through what it's about?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. It's two teenage boys that are, they meet a wanted man, and they're trying to help him get away from what I believe is the mob and also law enforcement who's trying to bring him in, and while he's trying to connect with his ex-girlfriend, we'll say, played by Reese Witherspoon.
You know that guy?
I've never seen him before.
What'd you say, boys?
You got crosses in your heels.
Nails, shaped like crosses.
What for?
Ward off evil spirits. I'm waiting on my girlfriend. She got these birds tattooed on her hands here. Nightingales. Good luck, birds.
I just can't spend the rest of my life running away with him.
She don't care about nobody but herself. Ain't stuck off in that island because of her.
Ma'am, have you seen this man?
No, sir.
Son, have you?
What do you do?
This river brings a lot of trash down. You gotta know what's worth keeping and what's worth letting go.
You never said your name.
Mud. You can call me Mud.
But yeah, it's one of the better movies I've seen. Like I said, Ty Sheridan gives one of the breakthrough performances I think we'll see this year, and Matthew McConaughey continues where he left off last year. This might be his best performance, if you ask me, so far. Although I think we might have him top that later this year with Dallas Buyers Club. Jeff Nichols did Take Shelter, and between this and that, back to back, he's starting to grow as somebody that I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does next. I was pretty absorbed by this film, and on the edge of my seat during the climax. It was pretty outstanding.
Yeah, I really liked Mud as well. I would say, yeah, McConaughey, the past, what, like 2-3 years now, he's just been kind of knocking it out of the park with performance after performance between this and, what, Killer Joe, Magic Mike, The Paperboy, which I wouldn't say is a good movie necessarily, but I do like him in that movie, Bernie, and, even the Lincoln Lawyer. I mean, he's been taking on these very interesting kind of dramatic roles of movies that just aren't gonna, you know, aren't bigger movies. He's not, you know, doing another romantic comedy with Kate Hudson or whatever. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting to see him kind of challenge himself again after, you know, starting off, I would say, fairly strong and then, you know, coming down for a while. So watching him in Mud now, where he's not glamoring himself up at all. He's playing this, you know, this dirty guy living on some boat in a tree on some island somewhere, and, you know, eat beans with his hands. Like he's playing a real kind of guy who's not concerned with his vanity and all. It's nice to see an actor kind of take on a role like that. But at the same time, it's called Mud. It's about Mud, but he's not the main focus of the story. Like, this is a coming of age story. Which I don't think you'd really get the idea of that from the poster, which features a grizzled Matthew McConaughey holding a gun in his hand. Like, it's really about these two boys, mainly the one boy played by Ty Sheridan, who's really good in this film as well. And I like that. I like that, Jeff Nichols, who's made this, he's made Take Shelter, which gets better every time I watch it, by the way. I love Take Shelter. And Shotgun Stories. All these movies all kind of have this, they all take place in the same kind of South location involves this kind of slice of life Americana kind of feel to it, but they're all different in terms of their genre. Like Shotgun Stories is this kind of dramatic family oriented feature. Take Shelter is this basically psychological thriller slash apocalyptic type drama to an extent. And now Mud is a coming of age story, but they all have the same feel. Like Jeff Nichols has certainly established a style or in terms of how he makes his films play out, where they're set and everything, but he's approaching different genres, and I like what he's doing here. And with Mud, it's a bit slow paced and it's quite long, but I really enjoyed what I got to see. I liked how the story played out. Good cast in this film, by the way, too. I mean, along with Matthew McConaughey and Ty Sheridan, Reese Witherspoon also kind of playing against type to an extent. She's not downplaying her looks per se, because that's kind of the person she's playing, but she's not wholesome in this movie, I guess I could say. Michael Shannon shows up here too, the great Michael Shannon, who's just seems effortlessly good as this kind of as the uncle to one of the boys who wants him to grow up right, but he's not like his father, but he's kind of his adoptive father in their living situation, it seems, and he's quite good at playing a very kind of natural kind of guy. Sam Shepard shows up here, and
yeah, he's awesome.
I like seeing Sam Shepard pop up in roles.
Yeah,
and it's a well acted film.
Yeah. Ray McKinnon too, that plays the Ty Sheridan's dad, he was also in Take Shelter. I believe he's Michael Shannon's brother, right, in that one.
He's good in this as Ty Sheridan's father. He has such what's neat, the parents of Ty Sheridan, they're like having problems, and basically his father, he's both trying to like teach his son how to, you know, be a man, be a good person, but it's clear that he feels like he's failed himself as like a family, as the provider for a family. And it's neat to see that kind of reflect through this film, like through his character and how he's kind of handling his son and talking to his wife and things.
Did you see it, Adam, or no?
Unfortunately, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Put it at the top of your list.
It's still at the local art house, so it's certainly doable.
It's gotten something like, if I heard right, it's something like a 99 on Metacritic or something.
It's like Rotten Tomatoes, I think, and it's probably fairly high on Metacritic as well, but yeah, it's certainly one of the better reviewed films of the year, and it's doing very well too, like for that kind of movie. It's getting good kind of theater averages, and it's continuing to play, so it's a good win for Jeff Nichols for sure. I'd like to see if that carries over into award season, just because of how it's got kind of that same sort of buzz, equivalent to Exotic Marigold Hotel, which opened last year, like fairly early in the summer, and kind of carried through, even Midnight in Paris, which kind of carried through throughout the summer. So that's Mud in a good number of theaters for a limited release now. So I can talk about Francis Ha.
Have you ever done where you play fight?
I don't want to.
Oh, it's super fun.
I know when to go.
Oh my gosh, stop it!
Damn it!
Oh, sorry, you have to like fight back.
Stop it! I said stop!
Oh, so sorry.
I asked you to move in with me. You said no.
But I can't.
You can. You don't want to.
What do you do?
It's kind of hard to explain.
Because what you do is complicated?
Because I don't really do it.
This is the film from Noah Baumbach, and starring Greta Gerwig. Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig co-wrote the film together. Frances Ha is about a woman named Frances, who is a dancer, an aspiring dancer living in New York, and she has a best friend she's living with. That best friend kind of moves out, and it forces Frances to kind of travel around to different apartments as he kind of seeks a direction for her life to take, as he's trying to kind of get herself motivated to do anything, really, in terms of what she wants to do with her life, her career, or what have you. And It's not a lot to explain in the plot, I guess. It's fairly kind of
free. Right.
But I really like Francis Ha. I'll say this because Noah Baumbach is a filmmaker to me who a lot of his films ride on kind of an acidic quality. It relies on the characters kind of being very mean, and I think it worked for Squid and the Whale, with Jesse Eisenberg and Jeff Daniels. I like that film quite a bit. It didn't work for me at all for Margot at the Wedding, which just seemed just so mean.
I hate Margot at the Wedding so
much. Oh, it's so terrible.
It's so terrible. It's a shame. It has a good cast, and I think the cast is doing good work in it, but
it's almost enough to kill your faith in family as an institution.
It's hard to watch. And then Greenberg, which starred Greta Gerwig, which I wouldn't say is necessarily a very mean-spirited film, but it certainly has the same kind of qualities that Noah Baumbach brings to his film. There's other films as well, but those are like the ones that are just most recent. With Francis Ha, it's the thing I like about it is how it seems very unlike that. It doesn't have that mean quality, at least certainly not as apparent. And I think it's because Greta Gerwig co-wrote this film, and it has a different sort of handle on what the characters are going through. And there are other qualities that come present within these characters that we'll be sure to be point out. But overall, I did really like Frances Ha. I think, and it's a lot. It comes down to Greta Gerwig for me, who I think is very good in this film. I think she has a quality where she's very likable. She's very open. She talks, but she can also be irritating and annoying to watch. And the decisions that she makes aren't always like the strongest. And you kind of feel that you're like, why are you doing like it? It feels like a very fully realized character as opposed to one that's just doing things that either service a plot or feel true to the pure quirkiness without having to appeal to other aspects of the story. But yeah, that's I can talk about it more. But Mark, you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Francis Ha. This is the one that I assumed everybody will disagree with me on, and that's fine. It's one of the types of these films that really irks me because everybody seems to love it, and I just can't understand for the life of me why. The title character, Francis Ha, am I allowed to swear on this podcast? I don't remember.
We don't tend to, though.
We don't tend to. Okay, good. I'll leave the F-bomb out of it and just say, she's a total mess. And they keep referring to her in the movie as unlikable, or as undateable. They probably should be referring to her as just unlikable. And that's what I don't understand, why so many people are drawn to her character. Because I'm sitting there watching her and just being like, I wanted to just shake her and say, wake up. she doesn't seem to have any idea of how to organize her situation that she's in for the better, and is constantly stumbling from one problem into another. And I don't know, that I just found her scatterbrained personality to be almost just annoying, I guess is the best word I could use. She never seems to grow or improve. And doesn't have much of a desire to, is really what I kind of took from it. And I don't know, with Noah Baumbach, it's beginning to feel, for me at least, that he's a little bit, I don't know if this is the best word to use, but maybe pretentious in his films choices, because I wasn't a huge fan of Greenberg. And like you mentioned, Margot the Wedding, and now Francis Ha. And I did like, Squid and the Whale, which you wrote that along with Life Aquatic. I'm a big Wes Anderson fan. He's done a few films with him, that and Fantastic Mr. Fox, but it just seems like lately the films he's making are not for me. So I'm alone on that one, I know.
Did you see it? I forget.
You know what? I didn't. I wanted to go last week, but I wasn't able to make it happen. But I mean, my relationship with Baumbach has been testy at best, just because, like I mentioned with Margot at the Wedding, I just think that's such a mean-spirited film. I don't have a problem with characters being mean to each other, but this was just excessive to the point where, these people are supposed to love and care about each other, and they clearly didn't. I like Mark was saying, I do like some of his stuff with Wes Anderson. I think there's a lighter touch to it. I think that Anderson kind of softens Baumbach's more acidic instincts. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing Francis Ha. I don't know that I'm going to run out and go check it out, but I wouldn't mind renting it.
I'd recommend that you see it. Just 99% of people seem to love it and love her, and I'd be curious what you think when you do see it, especially if you aren't a huge fan of Baumbach going in. But yeah, I don't know. I've heard many people's take on it, and I'm still like, no.
Shot in black and white, right?
It is shot in black and white.
It's nicely shot, and there's a lot that I would say I admire about it that way, but and she does a good job with the performance. It's just I don't like her, and I'm not I become less and less interested in her as she continues to just screw everything up and not really seem to care about it. You know, it's I don't know.
I disagree with so much. Like I know.
Everybody.
You don't think she grows at the end of this film?
I don't think
she's changed.
I don't know. I don't see her ever really like. I don't know. I see the relationships around her changing. You know, between especially her and her best friend. But I don't know. She seems like she's just going to get into more and more situations.
See, I can't see that at all. It's not a huge shift in character from where she starts to where she ends, just because that's real. I don't think you change from in a few months, like you're just suddenly a different person. But I do think the way the character does evolve, that it does. The responsibility becomes more of a thing for her at the end of that film, I would say, than how she starts it.
I didn't see it, I guess, but I guess I just wanted more of a character arc, and maybe that's not what this film is about, and maybe it's not necessary for her to have one. What was off putting for me was that I just wanted to watch her mature and you know, kind of grow up a little bit. But I don't know, maybe I just misread it and saw it, you know, in the wrong perspective.
Fair enough. But in terms of filmmaking, it was shot in black and white. It's very much going for kind of a evoking Woody Allen in its senses and like
ways. Yeah,
yeah, because Manhattan is the first thing I was thinking about when I was second thinking about it.
It is. It's very Woody Allen. That's the best thing I would compare it to. I think would be like early Woody Allen.
All right. So that was that's Francis Ha. I really like it. Mark's the other way.
Yeah, I really don't.
Choose wisely.
I'd say see it though. Like if we were recommending it, I would say see it because I'm definitely in the vast minority here. So most likely you'll end up liking it.
Did you get any enjoyment out of it though? Like were you watching?
I wanted to. I was really excited going in. I even changed my Facebook wall cover thing to her dancing, and I was excited about it from the trailer and whatnot. But no, I for the first like half hour or so I was enjoying it. But I think from there, no. I left more angry than, just because it was another one of these movies where I'm like, damn it, why do people like it? What am I not getting here? That's kind of how I was with Amore last year. I I loved the performances, I loved the direction and everything about it. I didn't like the movie so much, and I wanted to, and I knew I was missing out on something with Amore. With Frances Ha, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that I am, but I just am left more wondering. Yeah, I don't know.
It's because I just like for a Baumbach film, this just seems like his most accessible one. one that more people can get behind as opposed to something. The Squid and the Whale, I think, is kind of an acquired taste of really enjoying a film like that.
When Squid and the Whale came out, I think if I'm not mistaken, that's not too long after Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, very true.
And I was a huge fan of Royal Tenenbaums and
like
Rushmore before that.
That's like 2001.
Oh, love Rushmore.
Rushmore and Tenenbaums were like my two favorite Wes Anderson films, and I was huge into those movies. And Squid and the Whale kind of reminded me, of those movies a little bit. And so I think I really liked. I still quote the whole Philistine quotes.
It's later than I thought. Squid and the Whale was like 2005. So that's after Life Aquatic, huh?
Oh, is it really?
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe that's why I was reminded of Wes Anderson when seeing
it. That Baumbach connection, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yep. Makes sense.
Someday we'll find it, the Baumbach connection.
All right, Adam, how about you pick up another?
Sure, Disconnect is, it's, ironically enough, the closest thing we've had to kind of that, Altman-esque tale of a bunch of different characters in different places and phases of their lives that have a common connection. Basically, it's about people's struggle to connect using modern technology.
What are you looking at? Can you please not do that at the table?
He is.
Is he your girlfriend?
Girlfriend?
You type away.
This is a client. I gotta take this.
Hey.
Sam! All right, dude, I found it. What do we write?
My name's Jessica. I loved your song on your page.
It touched me.
Hey, boys. Doing homework? Or that?
Okay.
Have you used a MasterCard for something?
No.
I want to know why the credit card isn't working.
This guy has all your information. Did you visit chat rooms, message boards?
Sometimes.
Who wants to go private tonight? Mm-hmm. Wow, you're really hot. You're a puma.
What's a puma?
It's like the step before a cougar.
Oh my god. I'm a reporter.
I was wondering if you would let me interview you.
I don't know.
Everything you do, someone out there can see.
There is a young reporter who is trying to land an interview with an underage chat room worker, and she's really hoping that's going to be her big break. There's a teenager who's being relentlessly cyberbullied, and sort of his struggle to, you know, to deal with that, and then his parents and sort of their, particularly his father, and the way his father deals with what happens with that. And there's also a couple who recently lost a child and sort of what happens to them after their identity is stolen and the lengths that they will go to get their identity back. This is a really strong film. I mean, ironically enough, the film I thought of mostly was Crash, although this is infinitely better than Crash. You know, it's cool because it's really tricky, I think, for films nowadays to try to incorporate modern technology in such a way that doesn't seem completely awkward and stilted, just because, I mean, things like text messages and voicemail and, you know, going on the internet on your phone are things that are very much a part of modern life, but they're kind of hard to do successfully in a movie. You know, how do you communicate, oh, so-and-so got a text message that's telling him this very important thing. You know, you can't have a character, you know, reading every single message out loud within the context of the film and have people think it's believable at all. I think this film does a really good job with different graphics and whatnot to really incorporate technology in such a way that it really works. I really like the performances, particularly, Paul Patton's really good. Michael Nyquist is really good. Most American audiences would know him from Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol and the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But what the film's got just a really solid kind of emotional heart to it. These characters go through a lot. There's a lot of really cool character arcs. And when you get to the end, I mean, there's kind of a nice, there's a good feeling to it, even though they're dealing with a really tough subject and they don't really have a lot of answers. You know, there's at least some hope at the end, which I think is really neat. So it's a solid one.
Yeah. So as much as, as much as you're praising it and I praise Francis Ha, Mark Johnson went down on Francis Ha, I'm coming out on disconnect. Cause I don't like this movie. That's my basic takeaway. I do think it's strongly acted. I do like the actors in this movie. I think Jason Bateman is doing a great job here. I like Frank Grillo, who I keep seeing in things, and I really like him as the other father who has a business of kind of a cyber detective, as you would call it, as he tracks down people that steal go through identity theft. Like, he deals with kind of technology issues in that way. And, like, yeah, Alexander Skarsgård and Paula Patton, they're, like, the actors here are mostly solid. I like the performances. But for me, the movie, I feel like I got what it was doing within, like, 30 minutes, and it's a 2-hour movie, and so I'm just dealing with the, kind of the fallout from all these things that happened. I don't feel like it really adds anything that I haven't kind of seen before in any kind of discussion or any kind of depiction of how technology's kind of taken over people's lives in certain ways, and because of that, I felt disconnected from the movie. It didn't have me gripped in terms of kind of really like reflecting on how these themes are affecting my own life and what have you. It just felt more like this is gonna play out. It doesn't really seem that important to me, but whatever, I'll watch it. And so yeah, what I get is strong performances, but unfortunately that just wasn't enough for me to like really enjoy the movie overall, especially because I think the climax of the film is way over the top, and I do not like how it becomes very stylized all of a sudden and tries to put that depiction out there. Like, it kind of fell apart for me, and it kind of hit a lot of dramatic tropes that I feel familiar with. I kind of got where certain arcs were going to go just because I've seen enough films to kind of understand what that means. And that's not always an issue, but I already wasn't, like, too keen on the film, so it didn't really help me in handling it.
Did you see the film, Mark?
I have not, no. Honestly, I don't even know that I've heard of it, so it's interesting to hear.
Yeah, it came out of Toronto.
Okay.
It's a new film by Henry Alex Rubin, and I'm trying to see if he's... I feel like he's done something else that...
He directed Murderball, which is...
There we go.
Which is one of my favorite documentaries, yeah. And that was one of the reasons I was really excited for this film, because, like, what, the guy that did Murderball directed a feature motion picture? But
you know, I get what you're saying about the stylization at the end. Mm-hmm. And I can understand where you're coming from, because it is a bit odd, and you either roll with it or you don't. So I get that. I found that, you know, the performances and such were, you know, I was emotionally, you know, drawn in. You know, something that I kind of, it resonated with me. I like films that are about concepts and then find a way to illustrate those concepts in such a way that feels organic. Which is one of the reasons why I love Kieslowski so much, because that's kind of what he did better than anybody else. And this is certainly not on that level. But, you know, for me, I really, like I said, I was emotionally drawn in. I thought it was effective on that level. And so, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I just had a very different experience.
Yeah, and it's fair enough. And again, I can praise the actors all I want. I think Jason Bateman, who's not surprising me by putting in a solid dramatic performance, because I think he's done that in other things, which go overlooked because those things tend to be comedies. It's just that he's playing the straight man and has certain aspects of a character that know how to handle drama. That said, I mean, I really like him in, like, The Kingdom, for example, but it's an ensemble cast, and I think they're certainly doing their best in, with what they have to work with. I do think there's a couple plots that just didn't work for me overall, like the plot with the news reporter and the underage sex chat site worker. Like, that one just didn't really go anywhere for me, and it just kept kind of hitting the same points. And because it's a film that it's a hyperlink film where all the characters are, like, connected in various ways, no matter how loose the thread may be. It felt like it was kind of struggling at some points to, like, kind of make sure you got, like, oh, this is why this person's connected this way to this thing. Like, it has that aspect to it. But at the same time, I do admire a film that's able to kind of take a large number of characters and make them interlocked in some way. But yeah, overall, I wish I could have got into it more, because I was looking forward to seeing it. I do like everybody in this movie, and as I said, it's from the director of Murderball. Like, there's a lot of things to praise about it. And I mean, in terms of a critical standpoint, it is getting more good reviews than bad reviews. So, I mean, there are certainly people that like our own Mark Hoban is a big fan of this film. He champions it as well. But
it's really cool, too, because, I mean, one thing, it's an interesting parallel that you can draw is, you know, we had the film Bully last year.
Yeah.
The documentary that came out. And this is sort of, in some respects, sort of the narrative counterpart to that, at least with one of the plot threads. It's not like it's pervasive, but I thought that was an interesting... That's certainly a film that I was thinking of while I was watching Disconnect.
Yeah, you can put this on the poster. Better than Bully. Aaron Neuwirth, out now.
Yeah, they're really going to run to put you on that one, buddy.
Better than Bully. That'll be like me saying, Before Midnight, Ethan Hawke's best movie this week. Like, that's Disconnect. I'm going to... Adam, big fan of it. Me, not so much. Mark, how about another film you can draw in?
Okay. Well, we could talk about Stories We Tell, which is Sarah Polley's new documentary about basically her family and discovering, you know, who her birth father really was. And I'm becoming a really big fan of Sarah Polley between Away From Her and Take This Waltz, which was in my top 20 last year. Stories We Tell, I thought, was a pretty amazing film. It's a very personal story, very intriguing how they show, you know, the whole, how truths are can be dependent on who's telling it. You know, there's so many different sides to this story as far as, you know, the perspectives from the different angles of this one woman who is the mother of Sarah Polley, and how she affected so many lives in a different way. And I don't want to spoil anything, so I won't. But there's a extremely fascinating twist that blew my mind at the end, and made me love this film all the more. It's probably my favorite documentary that I've seen since maybe Exit Through the Gift Shop. I'm real curious. Yeah, I'm real curious with this one to see. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm just curious how if we'll see it in the lineup for documentary come Oscar time.
Can you I know the film has a certain way of telling it. So can you describe it? It's because the documentary. Can you describe the style of documentary it is?
I don't know that I can without. Did you see it or no?
I haven't seen it, no. But I
okay.
I
don't want to say too much because I don't know if you know the twist already.
No, I don't know the twist.
It's amazing watching how this woman, who is the mom of Sarah Polley, this life she led, and how everyone just kind of was drawn to her. It's like the whole moth to a flame kind of situation where everybody just wanted to be a part of her life, and they almost excused all the little things she did that were not terrible, but wrong, I guess, you know, you'd say. So it's an amazing story as is, and then there's this whole underlying thing that goes with it that's just absolutely incredible. So I highly recommend it. Neither one of you have seen it then, right?
Not yet, no, I've been wanting to.
Like I said, almost went yesterday, but couldn't make it work.
It's,
yeah, as soon as you can.
Interesting to me to see that Sarah Polley, who just had a film, has already made another film, and it's a documentary, no less, which, you know, isn't exactly something that doesn't take that doesn't take a short amount of time to do. I mean, it's a doc. I mean, I'm curious how long she's been working on this film.
I don't know, but I'd imagine a good while, just because how many people she speaks to and getting her family together, and that's what makes it so neat is that she's interviewing her family members, her siblings. And so you can see there, it's not like a normal interview where, you know, in a documentary where some people are uncomfortable or whatnot. You can tell there's just this ease of we're just sitting around talking about mom, vibe to it. And that's, so you kind of get drawn in even more because of that. You kind of just feel like you're listening to a family tell their story, which you essentially are. And it's a heck of a story, so.
That's good to know. I mean, because I initially heard about this film, I was like, "All right, I like Sarah Polley. I'm not sure what the interest factor is in me just seeing a documentary about her family, but I'm glad to know that there's there's a part of that."
I have an interesting relationship where I don't like. I haven't seen Away from Her, unfortunately. I saw part of it on a plane, which doesn't really count.
Okay.
But I really didn't like Take This Waltz. So I'll be curious to see how this is different aesthetically.
Okay. Oh, it's definitely a lot different. I wouldn't compare these two films or those two films.
Which is, I think that'll make it really interesting just to watch, you know, that's the one introduction I've had, and then to see how it's different or similar or whatnot.
Okay.
I really enjoy Take This Waltz.
Terrible.
There's a basic idea that's a little much of having the quirkiest rickshaw driver around woo you off your feet, literally, because he's in a rickshaw, but I some strong acting.
Michelle Williams is so awesome. I don't even know that, she's arguably my favorite actress right now, but I might have had blinders on just because I was so, I mean, she's so good in it. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
That one. I love her overall, though. She should be my friend.
Yeah. She's great.
So that's a story Stories We Tell, which is opening it's in limited release now, and it'll spread to a few more theaters.
It's funny that the subject of this podcast, because the three of the films we talked about are, of course, not counting Frances Ha, are my top three of the year so far. Place Beyond the Pines, Mud, and Stories We Tell. So I definitely recommend tracking down some of those.
It'll be curious to watch to at the end of the year, you know, if you're on the top 10 one to see how much the placement might have changed or stayed the same.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, always is.
Yeah, for sure. And Place Beyond the Pines, I'm curious to see where that's going to stand at the end of the year for me. But at the same time, I'm not going to talk about it because I've talked about this film already in a previous podcast, but Spring Breakers is a film that hasn't left my mind in terms of movies that I found to be really interesting and what they're trying to do. But so.
I still need to see that. I missed it when it came here.
That is
a lot of folks love that movie, and some like hardcore nerds love the movie, like folks that don't, because when you watch the trailer, you see, it gives you kind of this one vibe. And then I had people that were telling me how much they loved it. I'm like, you loved Spring Breakers? Which is really interesting.
It's an interesting movie for sure. Amidst the imagery that you're getting and what it's going for. But yeah, that's, check out that podcast for Spring Breakers and Soap Grinded with Maxwell Haddad. That's a fun one. Let's see the next film. I'll bring the next one up. The Iceman. I think I'm the only one that's seen The Iceman, correct?
Yeah, I'm part of it.
The Iceman.
It played at my festival, but I have not seen it.
That is the Newport Beach Film Festival, correct?
You got it, brother. Yeah. Twitter hashtag #15 or at NBFF.
The Iceman stars Michael Shannon, and it's based on a true story of Richard Kuklinski, a notorious contract killer who is also a family man. He's known for having killed over 100 people for the mob, while his family remained kind of clueless about his actual occupation. And yeah, Michael Shannon stars as Richard, and the film, it's not very good. I really wish it was good. I think Michael Shannon is really good in what he's given in this role, but I think the movie it's very limited in what it's trying to do. I've since learned that it's had production issues, which don't really surprise me in terms of kind of the direction they're trying to take the film, but there's not a whole lot going on besides a very basic, kind of biopic that just happens to involve a person that killed people as opposed to someone that was like some kind of great leader or something. Like it doesn't really take any chances. It's not very stylish in its presentation. There's really nothing that makes this film anything above average, and so you're left with just some performances to key into, and like Michael Shannon's the only one that's really kind of delivering, really solid work. Like Winona Ryder's in here as his wife, and she's fine. Chris Evans is in here as a rival hitman, and he's fine as well. Ray Liotta shows up playing tough guy Ray Liotta, which he can do in his sleep, and that's not a bad thing, but it's just, there's nothing about this film that really separates it from anything, better. Like, it's limited in scope. It's kind of, it's a little jarring in terms of how much kind of time passes at some point, and you're just not really sure of, it doesn't have the best handle on when things are occurring in it as it goes along. You're just kind of going through the motions of a very standard story, and then it just eventually ends. And it doesn't really reflect on, that's the biggest issue. It doesn't really reflect on what Michael Shannon's character is doing. Like, it doesn't really, for being a man that's both a contract killer and a family person, you get the idea that, okay, he has to keep this a secret, but there's no real, you don't really learn more about him. You don't really learn about what drives him, what makes him want to be this guy, what makes him want to be this guy that shields him, shields his family from these other aspects. Like, there's not a whole lot of depth to the Iceman. It remains cold throughout. I movie I wanted to like, but yeah, it just didn't really.
Those tend to be the most frustrating too when you're
playing. The pieces are there, but they don't really
come together. You want to know why, but they just don't tell you why.
Yeah. That's exactly, because I think the story itself is very fascinating. Like, it'd make a great documentary. I'm not sure if it has a documentary already about Richard Kuklinski. Let's see. But, didn't quite pull through in the end. Mark, you got any?
I think that's it for me as far as what I've seen. I haven't been able to see Before Midnight yet or any of the other ones I think that you mentioned.
Okay, no problem. Then let Adam, why don't you go?
Yeah. I've been waiting for this for so long. Before Midnight is the third film in Richard Linklater's Before trilogy, following Before Sunrise from 1995 and Before Sunset from 2004.
If we were meeting for the first time today on a train, would you start talking to me? Would you ask me to get off the train with you?
Of course.
Well, this place is so full of thousands of years of myth and tragedy, and I thought something tragic was going to happen. Still there? Still there? Gone. You never saw
stop ogling girls then?
I don't ogle girls. I make love to them with my eyes.
Oh, wow. I'm stuck with an American teenager.
I feel close to you.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't know. I feel like you're breathing helium and I'm breathing oxygen.
What makes you say that?
In which Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy play a young man and a woman, young woman who fell in love in the first film and then separated at the end of the movie and were not able to find one another again for about 9 years. And this kind of takes up, 9 years after the second film, and kind of fills you in on what's been happening in the meantime and whatnot. And I absolutely love these movies. I first got into them around the time when Before Sunset came out, and just the level of the writing, and particularly the time for me where I was at as far as what I kinds of films that I was watching and enjoying, the level of the writing is just through the roof, because Linklater chooses to write these movies with the actors, and so there's a level of interaction that's there with the people that are actually going to be carrying it out that you don't have in a lot of films. I saw the film first at Sundance, and it was really tough because I had to hold off with talking about it with anybody until very recently, and I was able to see the film again this last week. But I love this film. This is going to be one of my best films of the year. Most definitely, I'd be shocked if it didn't make my top 10. I don't know how much you know about the story, Mark, so I don't want to spoil anything for you.
I've seen the first two, and I think, from my understanding, they're married and they have kids based on the trailer. I mean, that kind of gives.
Okay, then I can't really spoil anything for you, which is cool.
Okay.
I don't want to go there. If you haven't seen the trailer, the trailer. It's a terrible trailer.
Yeah, why would I was surprised that they showed that, but yeah.
I kind of
if I spoiled that.
Every time I see the trailer, I kind of tune out. Every time I was seeing it, I was just kind of all right. They're back.
but this is a fantastic film. I mean, it's absolutely
good.
It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, at this point in their personal, friendship and their professional relationship, Hawke and Delpy's chemistry is just ridiculous. I mean, the level of the writing is astounding. And what's really great about this particular film is that it's really trying to tackle, how to live out happily ever after. Because most films, when two characters finally get together, they fade out, fade to black, we're done. Like a character in a Barbra Streisand movie once said, they don't tell you that Cinderella drove Prince Charming crazy with a compulsive need to clean the castle. in a case like this, I mean, it's just fascinating to watch the way these two characters who know each other better than anyone else, there's this passive aggressive thing that's going on and they're arguing and they're going back and forth and how they, and just in this particular film, the gloves are off. Because in the first two, whenever they see each other, they're just so happy to finally be together that if they do argue at all, it's quickly glossed over. Whereas here, they've been together for years and the gloves are off and they're not kidding around. But no, I absolutely adore this film. I think Richard Linklater's direction is fantastic. It's simple and sweet. And the direction, not the direction, but the music by Graham Reynolds is absolutely beautiful. So huge, huge thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Adam. I probably call this is also just easily like in my top three of the year right now. It does such service to these characters and such a like, and to like be fully honest, like the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset are films that I had not caught up with until just a year prior, but I really loved those films as well. So seeing this film, I may not have had the kind of anticipation that others have had of waiting, another 9 years to see what happened next to these characters, but I was really compelled by the story that's essentially people walking and talking for almost 2 hours. Like, there's not much to it, but that's not a bad thing at all. Like, I was very compelled by what was going on in these conversations they're having with each other, and it's a credit to Richard Linklater, Julie Delpy, and Ethan Hawke of how well they know these characters, how well they, what they want to do with them, what they want an audience to see in them, and how things have changed for them in the 9 years since we last saw them. Like, it's such a kind of a fascinating way to depict a relationship and like how one reflects on certain things that happened versus how things are now versus how things will be in the future. Like, there's a lot to glean from just a movie that, you know, essentially has only two characters on screen for the majority with not much else going on in terms of visual flair or supporting characters or subplots. Like, it's just, it's strictly about one thing, and it makes that work very well.
And if you're going to talk, ironically though, if you're talking about supporting characters, this film has exponentially more supporting characters
yes,
than any previous incarnation of the series. But I think what's fascinating too for me is, I think it's so rare that you have any kind of franchise or any, well, it's odd to call it a franchise. I'll stick with the more generic term series just because of the different goals I think franchises have. But
Wait, you're not getting Before Midnight action figures after this podcast?
Well, how'd you know? You know, with Linklater, Hawk, and Delphi, I mean, I think it's so rare you have a team making a series of films and they're completely, I don't think they're focused in almost any way on the sellability of these films or how much money is going to potentially be involved in the box office returns. They're really focused on the art and the narrative and the characters and whether or not they have something to say. And Aaron, I know you said this in your written review, but this is really shaping up to be potentially one of the best film series ever made. Just when you look at the overall consistency, you know, it's so rare that you have a series of films where you have a great first film, you have a great second film, and then you can keep that going. Most of the time around the threequel or so, you know, you tend to start having a decline in quality. You know, it gets old. You're kind of done. In this case, they have gotten older, quite literally, but that's part of what makes it so fascinating. And Linklater's direction is so straightforward, and it works so well with the strength of the performances because they're having to do this really, really nuanced performance where they have to act by seeming like they're not acting, like they're just talking. And I've watched some interviews and whatnot where they were saying, well, it was really simple in some of the argument scenes to really just play it up because as an actor, I mean, that's what you do. And it's so hard to find the nuanced ways of just seeming like you're just talking with another person. And, you know, with the direction, there are takes in this film that put Children of Men, you know, to proverbial shame. As much as I love Children of Men, there are takes in this. There's a 14-minute take. There's a couple of cuts, but I know it's all one take in a car where they're talking the entire time. I cannot imagine how much dialogue how many pages of dialogue you had to memorize or how much rehearsal time went into that one sequence. And then there's another sequence, another half an hour sequence that's just virtuosic in the writing. I think if they don't receive a nomination for writing this film at the Academy Awards, then it's again further proof that a shaky system is you know, perhaps even broken.
I believe Before Sunrise is nominated for Best Screenplay in order.
Sunset.
Sunset, sorry. Yeah, Sunset was nominated for, that's what I meant, the sequel. Still Before. But yeah, the quality of this franchise, of this series, I think is reflected on how organic it feels. Like it comes at such a natural way as opposed to, well, we gotta do this again because people liked it the first time. Like it's more if they just want to revisit these characters and they let a very specific amount of time pass because that just, it makes sense in a sense for how one can interpret where these characters have gone since then. You get 9 years is a very long time, and somebody can change a lot within that amount of time, and it shows in these films, but at the same time, you're still seeing the same characters that those that have been following the series, have grown up with, and it's very effective to that extent, without, in the stories that are being told in these films, they don't feel contrived, like, there might be maybe a lot to consider in this film based on like the intensity of some of their conversations, but it doesn't feel like something that's not coming naturally. It feels like natural arguments that are occurring between two characters as opposed to like, we need them to talk about this in order to keep the plot going kind of thing. It feels more like an organic story being told.
Right. Cause I mean, we know the characters so well and they know each other so well. And it's just fascinating to see the way they've changed. And not only that too, what I really, really do like so much in this film is there's a lot of talk in the film about, biology versus personality and how, you know, well, men are just like this or women are just like this versus, well, you know, well, how much of the way that Jesse or Selena is acting is based upon that's the way men and women are supposed to stereotypically act or how much of it's based on the fact that that's just their personality type and the way that they're approaching something. And I think it's fascinating too because the film is, again, it's a testament to the writing, but it's so even-handed to a degree. I think definitely one of the characters comes across as a bit harder to live with than the other, but at the same token, when you're watching the film, you can understand why Jesse's upset, and you can understand why Celine's upset, and you can understand where they're coming from, and there are times when, you know, one of them will take a shot that's not fair, but there are so many times when you can see in that nugget of truth behind it, or what's frustrating them. I mean, I know the first time I saw the film at Sundance, sitting there, I mean, there's certainly a lot of wit in the film and a lot of fun moments, but during one of the longer argument sequences, I remember sitting there, which is one reason why the trailer makes me kind of a little bit angry, just because, you know, it was not, they weren't kidding. And I was sitting, it was almost like watching your parents fight if you weren't used to seeing your parents fight. Just sitting there, you're sitting there going, no, please stop fighting. This is okay. You don't want to do this. Whereas the second time around, the humor was a lot more apparent to me than it had been the first time, where it had just been deathly serious.
Yeah, it's just a really good movie. I don't know where else to go with this. I mean, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, they're fantastic in this movie together, and just as actors, like Ethan Hawke is a person that I like in movies in general, but I think he plays this character quite well, and I think the performance comes out as naturally as it does from him, because Julie Delpy's just right there to compliment him so well. I think they're people that you can see why they have why their chemistry is strong in this film, because they just bounce off each other's so well, but they're very different in personality to an extent. Like Julie Delpy has a more soulful kind of way of life, and Ethan Hawke is he has a way of busying himself on screen, which is it's neat to watch. And watching them kind of play off each other, I like how you're getting these same actors that you got in 1994, but you're seeing how they've kind of evolved as actors, but still working together well on screen. I'm just dropping in circles. I mean, they're just really good in this film.
And you know what? I personally kind of hope that this is it, because I'm always wary about taking something too far when you've nailed it, and you've nailed it, and then trying to take it again, trying to, you know, dip in the same well again and just not coming up dry. But if they make a fourth film, you know, I'm confident enough at this point that they're only going to do that if they feel they need to, and they've got a story that these characters need to tell us. And so again, I'm hoping that this is kind of the end, but if it's not, I will be there bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to go.
Yeah, I'm down for the reboot Before Sunrise X with Taylor Lautner and Vanessa Hudgens. I can't wait.
Oh my lord.
Aaron, you need to be quiet.
This their Monte Carlo adventure where they,
that's enough.
They walk around on the rollerblades and talk. It's great.
Abe, if you're listening to this, Abe, you know, please help us here.
Can't wait. Can't wait for it. Gotta have it. Like Cold Stone. Let me bring up a movie here, The East.
Another corporate figure has been targeted by the eco-activist group, The East.
We need someone to get inside The East.
Who would you choose?
Me. I'm unexpected. Being unexpected is the only advantage that matters.
Robert McCabe called me himself. In 1 month's time, I want to know the identities of every person who poisoned his company.
I'm looking for the East tag.
I heard the East doesn't exist.
Who is she?
Welcome to the East, Sarah. There's something planned for us.
When it comes to breaking the law, most people can't handle it.
I can do it.
This is the film starring Britt Marling, Alexander Skarsgård, and Ellen Page. It's co-written by Britt Marling as well, with writer-director Zalbat Manglij, who previously brought us The Sound of My Voice last year, which also starred Marling in a supporting role. And this latest film, The East, has Britt Marling as a spy, kind of. She works for, who does she work for, Adam?
She works for private intelligence agency.
She works for a private intelligence agency. She's trying to infiltrate a kind of anarchist collective.
An eco-anarchist collective
known as The East, which is specialized in kind of enacting various nefarious plots onto big companies, maybe like pharmaceutical companies that have kind of polluted the earth in various ways. And so Britt Marley's job is to kind of investigate this group and kind of bring out the, bring them to justice or what have you. And in doing so, she becomes a Freegan, which is a person that,
was that a
lives,
thing
lives,
this movie, or is that a term that's actually existed?
That's a thing that exists, yeah, Freegan. It's someone that basically exists off the earth and tries to, avoids doing anything that's associated with consumerism to, for, in term, for principle. And, in doing so, she eventually becomes integrated into the East movement and has to, is forced to kind of participate in some of their schemes, one of which involves kind of like, inserting a pharmaceuticals drugs into their own, into that company's drinks at a function in order to, you know, make them get a taste of their own medicine, so to speak. And, but yeah, that's essentially the plot of this film. It's about this anarchist collective, this eco-anarchist collective. And, The East, I think, is, it's a solid film. I think it's a well-made thriller, from a kind of a lower budget art house perspective. I like that it still has I keep using this kind of sense of urgency in what it's trying to do. I think it has its issues in length, essentially. I think there's a couple plot threads that could have been shortened or, you know, not involved at all, and that would have made the film tighter and more effective as a whole. But I do like Britt Marling quite a bit. I think she's very good in this film. And as a co-writer as well, I think she has a promising career ahead of her. And I like Zsolt Bemelkovich's last film, The Sound of My Voice. I like that film more, but I like how he's certainly bringing out a style that works. Especially like in the opening kind of minutes of this film, especially, I really like how it really gets things underway rather quickly. It doesn't waste a whole lot of time with setup. It uses a lot of just images and clever editing to get you to know what you're seeing, what the setup is, without having to, you know, deliver tons of exposition on you through dialogue that's not necessary.
I'm surprised this one's in limited release. Like, I would think this would be more audience, you know, friendly, where it doesn't have to play in art houses. Is it not that way?
I wouldn't say so, though. I agree with you, actually, Mark. I wouldn't be surprised if it does spread wider than one would, you know, than some of the other films that we mentioned, for sure. I think it has a kind of audience appeal that will, especially in the way like the trailer's been cut together, like it,
yeah,
it has that kind of sense of, oh, this is a movie that audiences would want to go see and check out.
Yeah. Well, just look at like, oh, go ahead.
No, after you, sir.
I was just gonna say, look at the Purge came out this weekend in wide release, and that's kind of has that, I mean, I don't want to compare it to that film, obviously.
I know what you're saying, terrible, though, yeah.
But yeah, it has that same kind of, yeah. I don't know.
It's kind of a premise that one can easily understand based on one trailer to market it. Yeah, and it has, you know, Ellen Page and Alexander Skarsgård, Patricia Clarkson.
Right.
So, like, they're not necessarily big stars, but they're people that people, you know, recognize their faces from various things. So yeah,
it just hasn't got the name. I just don't. I mean, Ellen Page is her star is rising, but she's not at that point where she can sort of, you know, anchor a film on her own that's going to be some big blockbuster type. I'm with you, Aaron, pretty closely. And I like it. It's all right. I do think it has some of the same issues that you do as far as some unnecessary plot threads that really don't need to be there. It's very much an independent film. You know, it's a thriller in very much that kind of independent aesthetic. I do think sometimes there's a little bit too neat, a little bit too much of, well, this is this and that is that, and this is why we're doing this. I wouldn't have minded seeing a little bit more messiness when it came to some of the characters. But at the same token, I think it has a pretty interesting look at a Stockholm Syndrome-like thing. And it, well, it's not necessarily the same, and I'm no psychiatrist, so if my terms are completely off, then I apologize. But you know, she's infiltrating this group. It's not like she's a captive, per se, but it's interesting to see the way that she begins to empathize with these people. And how even we as audience members can understand where they're coming from to a degree, even though we're, you know, not on board with their method of expression. But yeah, I think I also quite like Britt Marling, and I think Aaron and I are both definitely in the Marling fan club at this point. It was really great to see Julia Armand in anything. and to see her pop up, that was really exciting. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies where I thought it was all right. I'm not over the moon about it. I think it's a decent film. I'm more excited at the idea that you have a young female co-writer choosing to make kind of a low-budget thriller than I am at the actual film itself. I hope that more people, more young talents, you know, try to make this kind of movie, just because the independent movie about, you know, the deadbeat kid who's got nowhere to go and his life sucks and whatnot, that's been done so many times, and to see someone try to take it a little bit more of a thriller direction, I think is, you know, something that we need.
Yeah, similar to what I was mentioning with Jeff Nichols with Mud, like, it, The East, I can see what director's Albert Mangliese, I will say that name as long as I want to, because I love saying that name, Albert Mangliese.
You just love saying any name that's hard for other people to say.
Yeah, but Albert Mangliese has Batman in the title, so I mean, that's, right, like, right. that's a twofer. But yeah, it's not that far off in terms of style from The Sound of My Voice. It's obviously made a much larger budget than that film, but I like seeing these directors kind of evolve despite having same stylistic sensibilities and similar, not necessarily similar setting, because Sound of My Voice is in L.A. area, and this movie's taking place on the East Coast. But you can see how they're connected from a directorial standpoint, but they're also different genres. And I like seeing directors that explore different territory and, you know, don't stay in one specific. I don't dislike directors that stay in kind of doing the same kind of thing over and over again, but I like seeing directors that kind of explore what they can do with genre despite having similar sensibilities seen throughout their films.
We're pretty much in agreement. It's solid. It's nothing to run out and go see, but it's certainly, you know, a decent thriller, and it's got some interesting ideas too. And it's also kind of a very timely thing where even if, and there's a lot of talk right now about, you know, vegans and freegans and save the planet and this and this and this and that. And I think it sort of does a good job of making you look again at something that maybe you thought you already had a defined opinion on, to kind of look around and say, well, you know, how could my life be a little different? How could I live a little bit more sustainably, per se? And I think any time that a fictional construct can do that, you know, and make you think about the way you live your life, I think that's a good thing.
Cool. So that's the East. I think Adam and I are warm-minded overall. We're not loving it, but we are liking it.
We're not hot. We're warm.
Yeah. It's just right. I think I have one last film to talk about kind of in full, and then I think we can move on to kind of more upcoming films that we're all looking forward to seeing, address those. But, I saw The Kings of Summer, the other day. This is another coming-of-age story about three boys who essentially run away from home and build a house in the woods and kind of live there for some amount of time. And the thing that most notable about this film to me is it's very stylish, which is something I didn't expect. It has a kind of a standard sort of story in terms of it has that kind of Stand By Me quality of kids out on their own doing their own thing for a while, but the direction of this film is, it's a very stylish film. It's a film that easily calls attention to itself in terms of the direction. It wants you to know that it's a very directed movie, which is something I don't see very often in these coming of age stories. They tend to just be, kind of just put it on the table and just let you watch and relate to these kids in some way, but, this one has a lot of slow-mo, a lot of interesting camera angles and things like it does a lot to make you know that the film has its own unique visual style to it. As a film itself, it fits the same kind of realm as other coming of age stories. It's funny, it's dramatic, it has some solid acting. I wouldn't say it's one of it's. I've seen a number of coming of age films this year. I've liked Mud, for example, which I already said is very good, and The Way Way Back, which I would say is also very enjoyable. This one, I would say, is kind of of those three, it would be the one that I put at the bottom of that list, but it's certainly not a bad film. It's just one that didn't provide me a whole lot to chew on compared to others. I think the cast is likable enough. I think the adult actors, Nick Offerman being for Parks and Rec fame. He's shining the best just because I like Nick Offerman in general, and I like seeing kind of a different aspect of his rugged man type character that he plays in Parks and Recreation so well. Megan Mullally, Nick Offerman's wife, who plays another one of the parents in this film, she's a lot of fun here. A lot of the adult actors, which includes a lot of comedic talents, by the way. Like, most of the adult actors in this film are all known for more comedic roles. They all have kind of a quirky nature to them, which I think is the most appropriate word to say here. You tend to like using the word quirky, but here it is. It's a likable film. I can see why it's getting kind of the praise it has and coming out of Sundance and things like that. Like, it works for what it's trying to do. I just wouldn't say it's anything too special, but certainly one to see. I'd certainly recommend that film.
Do they rule over a Moonrise Kingdom?
Moonrise Kingdom, definitely a better film than Kings of Summer. But I liked it. I mean, it's a solid film. It's not too long either. It's only like 90 minutes or so. It's an easy watch. And yeah, it's enjoyable for what it is. But yeah, that's the Kings of Summer. Let's move on. There's still a lot of other movies coming out kind of this year, this summer, in terms of, there's always a lot of movies coming out. The year overall, I guess we can kind of focus on more of films that are coming out in the summer period within the next few months that are, you know, most likely ride within the art house, spectrum. And, Mark, do you have any, films of that nature?
Yeah, I'm still looking forward to, of course, Before Midnight, since I live in Northeast Ohio and we get everything like a month after you guys. Mm-hmm. But, I believe The Bling Ring is this summer, right? So.
Yeah, that's be like next week. Yeah.
Yeah, and Only God Forgives, I guess, would be an independent film, right?
Yeah,
sure. That qualifies.
The new, Nicholas Winding Refn film starring reteaming with Ryan Gosling after Drive.
Yeah, that's a good title, After Drive.
Yeah.
And a couple others, but I think they're later in the year, as far as independent.
Adam?
Mostly for me, right now, it's Bling Ring. I'm not totally sure. I mean, Aaron and I were actually talking the other day, and I realized I'd never actually seen the theatrical trailer, just seen the teaser trailer, which I found a bit enigmatic, mostly because I thought that I was watching the theatrical trailer and thought, you know, Sophia was kind of, you know, I didn't know what she was doing. I really like Sofia Coppola, so I'll be curious to see kind of where that goes. I've heard some interesting things out of Cannes. You know, some folks really dug it, other folks not so much. Although Cannes backlash isn't really something that you need to put as much stock in as you might think. So, I mean, that's the one mostly for me that I'm looking forward to. I'm sure there are others I may not be thinking of, but that's
Blue Jasmine.
Oh, ooh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, you should put a link to the trailer in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll be doing a lot of that in the show notes.
Really, really, really strong trailer. I know Travers has seen that.
Oh, it looked great.
He said it looks fantastic.
Yeah. I forgot that there was...
That's the new Woody Allen film, by the way, starring Cate Blanchett, Alec Baldwin, and I'm sure a host of... And Andrew Dice Clay.
Those are the only
three I need to mention I caught already.
Sally Hawkins, Louis C.K.
Yeah, Louis C.K.
Bobby Cannavale.
Barney Cannavale. Yeah, I like him a lot, actually. Yeah. I've liked him since The Station Agent back in 2003.
It's all about Sally Hawkins, guys. Come on.
Sally Hawkins quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I moved... go ahead.
Nope, after you.
I was just going to say, after that trailer, I moved Cate Blanchett into my top five for lead actress predictions. She just looks awesome in it, so I'm excited to see it.
And it's supposedly, you know, one of his more serious films, which, you know, recently he's been heavily on the comedic bent, and so it's glad to see him take it something serious again.
I like that. I wasn't sure if it was, I saw pictures of the film and it looks really serious. Then I watched the trailer and it's like, it has a Woody Allen sensibility that I glued into very easily. But I like that I'm looking at images of the film and it's like, oh, this looks like a serious movie. Then I watched the trailer and it's like, oh, okay, maybe not. But,
well, actually, you know, like I said, I read, well, Travers was doing this like a summer preview thing, and he said it definitely fell into more of the serious vein, which after stuff like, you know, To Run With Love or Midnight in Paris or Tall Box Stranger or whatever works, it's been a while. You probably go back to like Cassandra's Dream in 07 when he actually made more of a straight drama.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is a straight drama, but at the same time, I think it leans more that way probably.
Gotcha. Let's see, I can bring up some more. I know Adam's been super looking forward to Much Ado About Nothing from Joss Whedon. Just you can't wait for it, right? That's the
wow. Just yeah, not really.
Okay, well, you say that because you're not a big fan of the play, but I'm looking forward to it. I actually might see it tonight, actually, which I'd be very happy if I did. But
yeah. I'm just not a huge fan of Shakespeare adaptations on screen in general. I think they tend to be rather difficult to do and do well.
Fair enough. But yeah, I'm looking forward to The Bling Ring as well, Blue Jasmine. The new Almodovar film comes out soon. I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah. You just can't hide it.
I just can't hide it. I like the trailer for that movie. Like,
and after The Skin I Live In, like, this is, like, such a such a relief.
A giant change of pace, yeah. Going from The Skin I Live In, which is Pedro Almodovar's version of a horror movie, versus this film, which looks like, what, flight attendants?
Total campy comedy.
Yeah, a campy comedy involving male flight attendants.
And I love Skin I Live In. I'm not knocking that one bit, but this is going to be nice change of pace.
Was that in top 10 that year?
Yeah.
It's certainly an honorable mention for me. I saw that movie fairly late, but I really enjoyed that film a lot, more than I was anticipating.
Well, it's cool too, because I mean, it's the horror movie that it's totally like how he would do a horror film, and there are bits that are so horrifying where you don't see anything, but it's just the idea is terrifying.
Yeah, Only God Forgives, I'm looking forward to. Fruitvale Station, a film that I've purposely not tried to learn anything else about besides kind of a very, very basic idea. That's the film that came out of Sundance with the most praise, I believe, Fruitvale Station, with Michael B. Jordan, who Abe would know from The Wire, of course. I wish Abe was here. He was also in Chronicle last year, but yeah, that movie's gotten a ton of praise, and that's gonna come out sometime in July, I believe. And let's see, The Spectacular Now is another film that I've heard a lot about coming out of Sundance and whatnot. I'm starting to see trailers for Inside Llewyn Davis, the new Coen Brothers film, but I'm not sure when that actually comes out.
That's probably going to be a late year release.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like December, I want to say December 14th or something like that. They gave it an Oscar-friendly date.
Oh, they're
December 6th.
They're starting that marketing early, that's for sure. So I'm like, yeah. Why am I seeing the trailer so often?
Well,
yeah.
It just, you know, came out of Cannes, and they won the Grand Prix, which is second prize.
Wow, there you go.
Up there.
Well, it sounds like a real pile then. I don't know. God, only second place.
It's cool too. I mean this is another late year release, but it's one to keep an eye out because the trailer just came out, and it's really charming. Is The Young and Prodigious Spivet, which is the new film by Jean-Pierre Jeunet of Amélie and Very Long Engagement fame. It looks absolutely charming and just wonderful.
What was it called again?
The Young and Prodigious Spivet.
Okay, thanks.
It's got Helena Bonham Carter, Judy Davis, and a couple of young child actors.
Wow, okay.
And the last film I'll bring up is The Grandmasters.
This
is a film from... what's his name?
Wong Kar-wai.
Wong Kar-wai, there it is. Wong Kar-wai, who did, like, what, 2046 and...
In the Mood for Love.
The Mood for Love, Happy
Together. Express,
and this is
Dash
the film.
Time.
This is the film, it's basically the origin story of Ip Man, which has already been made a film with Donnie Yen, but it's a Wong Kar-wai take on Ip Man, on the Ip Man story, which will be probably one of the most beautiful films I'll see this year. I will not be surprised.
Right.
I got a friend that saw that just the other day. He said it, it's kind of the thing where it's beautiful to look at, but it's alright, from what I'm told.
Okay.
Which is kind of a problem that Wong Kar-wai has, where he photographs his films beautifully, but a lot of times the narrative just doesn't have the drive that it could have to really hit home.
Okay, a Wong Kar-wai movie about a martial artist, that's rubbed me the right way already. We've talked about a lot of movies that are currently in limited release, and for the most part, they're movies that we wanted to talk about, and I think we'd, for the most part, recommend.
Get to it, people. You got no excuse.
It's fun to, of course, talk about the big movies that are coming out over the summer, but, you know, it's nice to have an episode like this where we can reflect on a lot of the smaller films that, you know, might not get a lot of attention otherwise, so it's doing our part, I guess, to just, you know, fill in the gaps for people that, you know, want to see something of a different variety this summer. So there you go. And yeah, there's certainly a lot more films that are coming out during the rest of the year, is when, you know, throughout this summer, that don't need to be necessarily be huge in order to, you know, have the attention they need to go to them. So, yeah, that's basically the bulk of this conversation. I think, I'm going to jump back to Abe and myself in another part of the podcast episode. But for now, I'll leave it there with you two guys. Adam, where can people find more of your work?
You can find more of my work at my site. Things I Know About the Movies, located at www.everythingyoualwayswantedtoknow.blogspot.com and at twitter.com/iltwinanarchist.
And Mark?
I'm a staff writer for the Award Circuit. It's awardcircuit.com, and my Twitter handle is @MJAwardCircuit.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much for coming on and discussing these movies with me.
Thanks for having us.
And guys, just, you know, support your local art house theater, man.
That's right.
Great, cool. So now I'm going to throw it back to Abe and myself.
Thanks, Aaron. Wow, that was some great discussion we just had. So we actually posted a couple questions on Facebook, and we got some pretty good responses here. First question is, what's the surest bet of the summer? Meaning, which summer film did you not question will be or was as pleasing as expected? We got some pretty good responses here. Aaron, I'm sure you've got some as well. Kyle wrote Man of Steel, so, you know, he's not questioning that's going to be a pretty good film. Jordan wrote The Conjuring. Mike wrote Pacific Rim. Leah wrote Piranha 3D. Always. Adam Gentry wrote Man of Steel. And Joe Jans wrote Iron Man 3.
Yeah, Kyle and Adam, I think they're just betting on Man of Steel just being great.
Yeah.
They can't miss it. That's what they're saying. In terms of surest bet of the summer, I the movie that I have no doubt will be like entertaining to me. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was Furious 6. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that I'm like, I'm not going to not like this movie. I didn't think that was,
I'm going to happen. I'm pretty sure that you came in with no qualms at all about saying, you know, this is actually going to deliver.
Yeah. And, I mean, Monsters University. I don't think that movie is a movie that's going to like fail in any way. I don't necessarily think it's going to be another Pixar classic, but I wouldn't say that it's a movie that I don't expect to not enjoy. So
that's true. Yeah, and certainly looks colorful. I was actually passing by the bookstore where they had like the art of Monsters University, and I was like, wait a minute, I shouldn't look at this because I don't want to spoil the movie. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to wait until after I see the movie to like look at the art of Monsters.
I was just watching Monsters, Inc. the other day, too. And, yeah, just to, you know, be like, hey, now I'm ready. And it's like that movie, that in terms of the animation, that movie holds up well. But you can tell, like, in scenes where, like, there's just kind of very few things happening in the background. It's like now there'd just be monsters everywhere if they made that movie today. They'd just, like, everything be going on in the back. There'd just be monsters walking around like nobody's business in that movie nowadays. That's what I'm expecting to see in Monsters University. Just monsters everywhere.
Just monsters everywhere?
Yeah.
I don't know. It is university.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're all rushing a frat.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the college shenanigans that these monsters get into.
So much hazing.
So many monster panty raids waiting to happen.
And nude undie runs in the library.
Speaking of nude undie runs, let's move on to our next question. Smaller movies this summer that you're looking forward to, or at least ones that don't seem huge. Izzy put Only God Forgives and The Hunt. I've seen The Hunt. I mentioned this before at the Newport Beach Film Festival. Great movie. Very good movie.
Cool.
That's with Mads Mikkelsen. And Only God Forgives, we talked about just previously.
Yeah, we talked about the trailer. Yeah.
Jim Dietz put Elysium, Europa Report, and The Iceman. Elysium, yeah, I like his take on that because, yeah, it's not a movie that necessarily seems huge just because the buzz isn't, like, for, like, general moviegoers, I wouldn't say.
It feels more like a smaller cult following, and it's, like, you know, not a whole lot of people. There was, like, huge mass marketing for District 9, but still,
things got to heat up. I mean, it comes out in August, so it's got some time.
Yeah. And did you watch The Iceman?
Yeah, I've seen The Iceman.
Is friend of the show Michael Shannon yet or not yet?
He's just the great Michael Shannon.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, I was talking about that in the previous segment, and it's not a movie I liked overall, but I do think Michael Shannon's just very good in things anyway. So.
When is he not good?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other question I had. What are people planning to see this weekend? Izzy put The East, which we talked about, I think it's a good movie, and VHS 2, which I have downloaded. I have not watched yet, but I'm really excited to catch it. I've heard nothing but great things about VHS 2.
On VOD, right?
On VOD, yes. I downloaded it on my PlayStation, and I'm looking forward to checking that out. my favorite thing about it so far is that it's only 96 minutes. Mainly because the first one dragged after a while, but this one, I like the directors involved. I like that there's less segments, and again, everything I'm hearing, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I heard that it's much tighter than the first one in terms of like the wraparound story, and I think there's only four segments
this time, yeah.
Rather than like five. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting.
And one segment's directed by Gareth Evans, who did The Raid Redemption, so there you go.
Boom, there you go.
Let's see. Gary, he has, I'm hoping to see Francis Ha this weekend, so I hope he checks that out and enjoys it, because I liked it. Mark Johnson didn't, but I liked it. And, last one, Tyler, he put, I saw The Internship and The Purge. Internship wasn't very funny, but was a decent feel-good movie. The Purge had so much potential with its story idea, but was too predictable and tonally confusing. I pretty much agree with everything you just said there. About both films, yeah, which leads me to the next thing I'm gonna bring up right now, at No Quickies.
Tim?
Every week on Out Now, Farron and Abe, we like to talk about a main movie. This week we talked about a number of different movies, but we didn't have any time for any of the other movies we saw, so that's why I was able to call that Now Quickies.
Deal.
And I am going to bring up The Internship and The Purge. We obviously didn't do full reviews on these movies just because we didn't find them to be ones that deserved a whole movie show compared to, you know, what we did today. Yeah. But Internship, yeah, it's a movie that's... It's not terrible by any means. It's funny in places. I think Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson have a obviously good chemistry, and I think it shows here. I like that they play characters that are, you know, going for an internship at Google, and the best thing I could say about their relationship in this movie is that they're like endlessly positive about everything, which is, it's endearing to watch those characters.
That's a good thing.
I wish the movie was shorter and funnier, but I mean, if you're gonna, I'd give it a solid Netflix rating.
Does it come in at like 2 hours?
It does, and it's like, why? That need to happen.
There's a question. Is it a bunch of, like, old people kind of confused about what the future, like, keyboard Google stuff is all about, like computers and stuff?
No.
Or is it, you know, they kind of play it, like, straight smart?
They play it straight smart. I mean, it's only Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn who are not familiar with technology. Everyone else is a 20-year-old intern at Google. Like, it's purely them. But even that stuff, like, it doesn't ride entirely on the fact that, well, this is how computers work versus right. I'm just gonna talk my way out of it. Like it's a lot of that, but I mean it's fine.
Okay.
Cool. Purge, on the other hand, that's just not good. That's not a good movie.
I saw your tweet about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it made a we'll get to box office in a second, but it made some money, so expect Purge 2 still purging in 2 years time. But yeah, it's like it's beguiling how you have like a concept so juicy and you just still make like the just ridiculous mistakes of having characters do things that are just frustratingly stupid.
Yeah.
It's irritating.
I didn't watch the movie, but I just watched the trailer and I just wanted to strangle that little boy.
I did too. I didn't even watch the trailers. I didn't know what was coming, but I'm watching, it's like, oh my God, this is...
if you just watched the trailer, I was like, nope, this is the worst concept ever. It's like, nope, this kid, I would disown him right then and there. Like,
there's the opportunity to do so much with the idea, too, and it's just kind of wasted on being like...
Yeah, and I heard that, too, where it was... there could have been a lot more potential, but it kind of goes with, like, a somewhat of a generic genre, or horror genre of, like, you know, entering the house and...
It does. It's basically the premise, the juicy premise of having crime be legal for 12 hours just leads to an excuse for cops not being able to come. That's essentially what it is. that's like the only reason, like, we need to make a home invasion movie. But why can't the cops come and why is the power out? Because crime's legal. Done. We've been doing that. It's like Rob Lowe and Thank You for Smoking. Thank God we invented the, you know, oxygen device, whatever. Like, it's that's the logic that was applied.
Yeah. It's a good movie. If
it's also very tame for a movie about like crime being legal and like an R-rated horror thriller. It's a very tame movie. Yeah, it's not really one that you'd be like, man, good thing that was R-rated. You don't really think that.
Yeah, I've heard some weird things about people saying, oh, it's, you know, it's graphic and gory, but it's kind of like a lame
hardly.
Story.
Oh,
hardly. Interesting.
Hardly. I mean, there's blood in it, but I've been around the block a few times this year, let alone, you know, in life when it comes to horror movies, and I'd hardly say this is like a huge R-rated movie. There's some, that's way too much time on The Purge. that's what I've been spending. Abe, have you seen anything this week that you want to talk about?
I didn't see anything new. I rewatched, what's the film? True Grit on Netflix streaming.
All right.
I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just rewatch this. And I also watched Place Beyond the Pines, which you and I talked about offline last week. It's a good movie. It's a solid movie. It's just the third act, one of the characters there just really annoys the heck out of me. It's just, that because of his character alone, I was like, I hate this third act.
You're not Le Beef. That's my True Grit.
I like how they don't use contractions in True Grit. Everything is set out. Like, I cannot do that for you. It's like, oh, I like that.
What a great example you put. Saying that. let's move on. Let's get
just
to
saying.
That was Out Now Quickies.
DM.
Let's get to Out Now Quickies.
DM.
Let's get to box office. Out Now Quickies.
DM. Oh, man. Quick for three, baby.
Okay, that's fine. You did a good job. Out Now Quickies.
DM. Oh.
Each week at Out Now, we try to go over the box office results, and generally we have predictions, but we didn't really predict anything this week. So let's just outright say what happened. The Purge made $36 million this weekend. It was it was made for $3 million. So good job, you guys. You marketed successfully. That's what I'm getting.
And that's why there will be Purge 2 still purging with, benzoyl peroxide now.
Good one. The internship opened also in fourth place at $18 million.
Fourth place? Oof.
Yeah, it's a close race, though, because Fast and Furious 6 is 19 in second place. Now You See Me was third place of 19.5. Fast 6, 19.7, 19.5. Those could change, I guess, because of actuals results that aren't up yet. Internships at fourth of 18. So, I mean, they're all right there, but clearly everyone wanted to see Ethan Hawke versus Home Invaders.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of think about, fourth place. What was the number for internship?
18.
18, yeah. Fourth place, 18. It's really not going to do much more than that because Superman comes out next week. It's going to be done.
Well, everything's going to be done next week. Yeah. So, like, yeah. You know what? Much Ado About Nothing debuted this week into, like, five theaters and
made a pretty good chunk of change.
A nice chunk of change for what it had, but I forgot to mention, I just got back from seeing Much Ado About Nothing.
Did you like it?
I did like it.
Great. I think good things about it.
It's, I like what Joss Whedon did with it. I mean, the play itself is kind of slight overall in terms of, like, William Shakespeare plays. It's not one that I'm like, man, this is Shakespeare at his prime, bro. That's what I say about Shakespeare plays.
That's what I
say when I see a good one. I come out of like, oh man, bro,
That's a quote that Sir Francis Bacon had back in like the day.
Yeah. Oh, bro, that was good.
Yeah.
But you're going to the story, you know what to expect. But if you know that Shakespeare story, but I mean, it for what it is, I enjoyed it. I like Joss Whedon's. His handling of the direction of this film, playing it in modern times, what have you, doing the score himself and everything, like it's a nice little backyard experiment that he made.
Very cool.
That happens to be a major
backyard experiment. I like the way you phrase that. Yeah. It's a backyard experiment, because he's rich.
Well, he is. But
and he's a good writer director.
Let's get to what we're going to talk about next week. There's a movie coming out. I think you've heard of it. It's called Man of Steel.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about House of the Dead Part 2. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Man of Steel comes out next week, the big Superman movie. I think we're all quite excited about this one.
Yeah.
I'm so excited that I actually wrote down my prediction already, something I never do for box office.
Yeah, that is very strange.
I always let everyone else go in front of me so I can gauge my guess.
So you can steal one of ours. You can outfox us with one of our own answers.
That's why they call me the Fantastic Aaron. You thought I was going to say something else? No, but I completely...
Fantastic Mr. Aaron Fox.
I completely did not do that just because I knew you expected it.
Clever.
I'm pointing at you, listeners. Abe's not smart enough to know that.
Clever.
But yeah, I'm going 87. I'm going 87 million next weekend.
87.
That's
okay.
Where I'm at. I almost tripled down by doing 83 again, as I did before.
Tripled down, yeah. But, is this coming out on a standard Thursday release?
It's a Wednesday
night release.
It's a Friday release.
Is it?
It's coming out on a Friday.
Isn't there like a weekend, or isn't there like a Thursday night showing?
There's a midnight showing and like an early screenings based on the Walmart tickets that were.
Okay. Oh, okay. I got you.
It's still a Friday to Sunday release period.
Yikes. I am going to go with,
I'm going to give you some numbers.
Yeah, sure.
I can give you some numbers. So those numbers pop up, man.
Let's just
riff here for a second.
Absolutely. Man of Steel, bro.
Superman Returns opened to something, all right. It opened to a... Really? Hmm. Not pull it up?
Really? Wow.
It opened to $52 million back in 2005. Or 2006. But, I mean, that's without 3D. Or I guess it was technically 3D. There was no 3D upcharge, and it was in significantly less theaters. Yeah, this one is in IMAX, and it is in 3D. Other DC series, though, I mean, you can, obviously, the Dark Knight series, I mean, Batman Begins opened to 48, Dark Knight, and Dark Knight Rises, 158 million. Yeah. That's a little high. Green Lantern, 53 million. Watchmen, 55 million.
Everyone's favorite, Sucker Punch?
Sucker Punch is a little, well, that's not a comic. That's not DC at all, so. It's just bad.
You said 86 million?
87 million.
87. I'm gonna go a little bit under you. I'll say 83 million.
83 million.
There you go.
Dropping bombs, Abe Mua.
Taking Aaron's thunder.
Way to give yourself a $4 million range of success. Like that.
Watch us both be wrong. It's gonna be like 120 million.
I'd still win, though.
Yeah, because you're under 120.
Oh, watch it be 82 million. But yeah, we're going to talk about Man of Steel next week. I know Scott's coming on. Everyone loves Scott Mendelson, I'm sure. Or they don't, but they show up anyway. So regardless, he's going to join us. We'll probably have a myriad of different guests. I don't even know what we're going to do for Man of Steel. Last year we did a episode for Dark Knight Rises, then we did a whole spoiler episode.
Yeah, so. And then we talked so much that we were like, you know what, we have to do a spoiler section. So we did a spoiler section.
Yeah, so we ended up having 4 hours of material on the Dark Knight. So yeah. I don't know how interesting Superman is going to be compared to Dark Knight Rises, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what we want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically going to bring us to the end of this week's podcast. So, you know, here we go. That's going to do it this week for Right Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeiseat.com. You can find my written movie reviews as well as at wiseofblue.com for all my Blu-ray reviews. Also tune in to wiseofblue.com this week for a Q&A I recorded with Sofia Coppola. That should be fun to check out. And, you of course can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/WalrusMoose.
Awesome. I'm going to send thanks again to Mark Johnson and Adam Gentry for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
And you can, of course, find most of the newest of the episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes. I'm still in the process of uploading those, but I have some more time this week, so I'll be able to hopefully get those earlier shows in so you can see how terrible we used to sound. HHWLOD.com. You can find all the episodes there, along with the other shows, including the shows from the Walking Dead TV podcast, the Long Box of Doom, other fun shows about comics and games and cool stuff like that. Outnow.podomatic.com. Most of the newest episodes, some exclusives, are located there. Outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to write in. Send us your thoughts on the various art house and indie movies that have arrived in theaters lately, as well as your thoughts on what you're expecting from movies coming out soon or what you're looking forward to still. You can do the same thing on the Facebook and Twitter page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast and twitter.com/outnow_podcast, as well as our new Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. The YouTube page.
YouTube.com/outnowpodcast, where you can check out the main reviews and special select interviews that Aaron has coming up, about 20, 30 minutes each.
Yeah, there you go. Last thing, and not to take it down, but I did hear some sad news involving Jim Dietz. Our friend of the show, who's
a friend of the show, the voice.
The voice, of course, who's been on many of our commentaries, as well as host the Nothing Is On podcast and Legion of Nizan, Legion of Dudes, the Walking Dead TV podcast. He lost a loved one this week, and so I just wanted to send best wishes on his way, and it was very sad to hear that.
Yes, sir. We're sorry to hear that, Jim.
Yeah. But, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Next week, we're talking Man of Steel, so that should be exciting. But until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Let me sing you a waltz. Out of nowhere, out of my thoughts, let me sing you a waltz about this one night stand. You were for me that night, everything I always dreamt of in life, but now you're gone. You are far gone. what you wear much more to me, just so you know. I hear rumors about you, about all the bad things you do. But when we were together alone, you didn't seem like a player. I don't care what they say, I know what you meant for me that day. I just want another try, I just want another night. Even if it doesn't seem quite right, you meant for me much more than anyone I've met before. One single night with you, little Jesse, is worth a thousand with anybody. I have no bitterness, my sweet, I'll never forget this one night thing. Even tomorrow in other arms, my heart will stay yours until I die. Let me sing you a waltz out of nowhere, out of my blues. Let me sing you a waltz about this lovely one night.